and talk among ourselves there. I sense the power here. I'm going to go without official. Yes, very good. Thank you, Hope. All right. As I was saying, welcome to the October 22nd meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you do need assistance in hearing the proceedings in chamber today, we do have hearing assist devices that are stored at each end of the dais. And with that, if you would please rise and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Madam Clerk, if you would please, the changes to today's agenda.
Certainly. Amendment number one to the October 22nd, 2013 board agenda. Staff is amending the agenda to set time for the introduction of the Cattlemen of the Year by the Cattlemen's Association. This will take place following item 21, just prior to the adjournment. Following adjournment, the board will proceed to the Madonna Inn for the Cattlemen's Association luncheon, per Government Code Section 54952.2C4. Addendum to item number two, Children and Families Commission appointments. Staff is replacing the attachment to add pages that were left out in error. Addendum to items number seven, airport layout plan. Staff is requesting to amend the subject line and recommendation for this item to include reference to a runway protection zone study as a part of the creation of the airport layout plan capital improvement project. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour notice and requirement.
All right. Thank you, Madam Clerk. That brings us to our consent agenda. I do have a couple requests to speak. We'll start with Madam Clerk Recorder Judy Rodewald, followed by Pandora Nash Carner.
Good morning, Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. Just a couple of corrections to Exhibit A and B on item number four. There were some clerical errors. One was a reference to a footnote, and then the other one was we left off a footnote about the consultants describing what a consultant is. And the clerk has the corrected exhibits. Thank
Very
you.
Very good. Thank you. Ms. Nash Carner, followed by Greg Bentoncourt.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Pandora Nash Carner, a District 2 Park Commissioner, Honorable Board, members of the public, and staff. I'm here in support of item number 8 on your consent agenda, which is the Cayucas Pier, to restore it as much as it can be for a total amount of $510,000. And just to put it in some kind of context, visitors and locals, of course, both enjoy the pier, and in the last 5 years, according to Justin Cooley from the auditor's office, the county has netted $3,331,085 worth of TOT generated out of Cayucas alone. So it certainly is worth supporting. And, of course, the longer we wait to repair it, the more expensive it's going to be, and I don't imagine the Coastal Commission's giving too many permits to build brand new piers these days. So I would appreciate your support today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nash Carner. Mr. Bentoncourt, followed by Eric Greening.
Just Greg Bentoncourt. I live in Cayucas. I'm involved in the pier project. Just a couple of details that might fill in some of the blanks. We've collected, we pledged the county $100,000 to help fund the rebuild of the pier, and we thought that was a pretty lofty goal, and it was. I'm proud to say that we've actually raised twice that much since the 4th of July, and we're not done yet. It's interesting to note that 50% of that money that we've raised, very nearly 50%, has come from out of San Luis Obispo County. And about 35% of that has come from Cayucas. And the most astounding thing for me is that 15% of that money has come from San Luis Obispo County, but not Cayucas. We, for example, were just in Paso Robles on Saturday where the Elks did a fundraiser. The Paso Elks did a fundraiser in which we sold about $850 in T-shirts. There'll be a thing in Atascadero in a couple of weeks. It's frankly remarkable the kind of support that we've seen around the county and around the state. I want to let you know that we made that commitment for $100,000, and we're very pleased to be able to meet that commitment. But with the extra money, we know that that money was pledged to the pier, and we want to spend that money on the pier. And so we're open to discussions about how we can support a county maintenance program or funding kind of additional, for lack of a better term, amenities or those kinds of things that we can use that money in a very positive way for the pier. So I just wanted to fill you in on those facts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bentoncourt. Final request to speak on consent, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening. Good morning. I'm speaking on item 14, a resolution authorizing the Director of Public Works to enter into environmental processing agreements with other public agencies, and SLOCOG is given as an example of what such an agency would be. There is some language in here that I think is symptomatic of the rhetoric about the California Environmental Quality Act that I think needs to be corrected so that we can have a truly balanced view of that act, its virtues as well as its shortcomings. When we talk about the responsibility being to, quote, negotiate the environmental regulatory process, unquote, it implies that CEQA is simply an obstacle to getting done, and that the job of CEQA review is to overcome that obstacle in some way. I take a far more constructive view of the California Environmental Quality Act when it is used properly, and I would prefer the words, quote, provide an information base for wise decisions and quality projects, because when it's used right, that's what CEQA does. And you'll hear a little more from me on the topic when we get to state positions in the morning hearing sessions. But I also have one question about this item. We have a ceiling for the projects to be done of $50,000 worth of environmental work, which would seem to indicate that it would be the negative declarations and mitigated negative declarations that we would be taking on and not full environmental impact reports, maybe a very focused one, but in generally not doing the EIRs. My question is, how would we know in advance that this was the case when the environmental process begins with an initial study? I want to be sure that in deciding what projects to take on, the existence of this ceiling doesn't bias in the direction of a negative declaration in the event that a negative declaration might not be appropriate. And I want all initial studies to be genuine inquiries, again, with the idea of providing the best cost-benefit projects, whether the costs are financial or ecological, and to simply provide the best information base for the wisest decisions rather than simply getting through an obstacle. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. With that, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda, bring it back to the board, asking colleagues if they have items to pull for separate comment or vote. Ms. Ray? Mr. Meacham?
None, sir.
Mr. Hill?
None, sir.
Ms. Arnold?
I don't have anything to pull, but if I might address Mr. Greening's comments. And Mr. Hutchinson's here in the audience, and he can confirm this, but I believe that the $50,000 price tag is simply to allow the departments to do that work up to $50,000, and if the CEQA work requires more financing, then that comes to the board in a public hearing so that it's transparent.
We'll ask Mr. Hutchinson to...
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, Mark Hutchinson, Environmental Division Manager for Department of Public Works. Not to get into too much detail, I appreciate very much Mr. Greening's perspectives and his comments, and we certainly take those to heart. I would point out, however, that where we find the complexities and the issues with both our agencies and other agencies is primarily not involving the CEQA process. That's certainly one of the environmental laws that we hold as key, and that's common to all of the projects in California. But we find that CEQA comprises about 10% of the environmental work that we actually do, the balance being primarily federal NEPA processes, Endangered Species Act processes, issues relating to historic resources under federal law. And that's where we find that the expertise that we've developed in the Department of Public Works can be very useful for other agencies as negotiating especially some NEPA processes from federal agencies that most of us have never heard of, let alone understand their regulations. So we do appreciate Eric's comments, but I expect that the focus of most of our exchange of information and assistance would be on the federal side of things. The $50,000 limit simply is set to make sure that if things are bigger and require more money, that it might be much more appropriate to turn fully to the consulting side of the house and let the folks with that level of staffing and expertise assist with the project.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson, and appreciate the exceptional work of the Environmental Division of Public Works. With that, I'd move the approval of the consent calendar as amended.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham and Mr. Hill. I will just drop in with a brief comment on item number 8. The item before us here is the funding of a project to stabilize the Cayucas Pier so that it will survive the winter and be there to restore come spring and into the summer. And I want to thank our general services staff, Ms. View, Mr. Black, our two deputy directors in different parts of that house for their really strong work. And, in fact, Mr. Hutchinson of Public Works is in there with us as well, teeing up the permit that will eventually go through the Coastal Commission process for the actual restoration of the pier, the replacement of pilings and such. But this this work is going to be started, we expect, within a few weeks, and we'll have that pier stabilized to the best we can. I can't leave this subject without commenting on the extraordinary work of the community of Cayucas. Mr. Bentoncourt and others from that community are here with us today. They have been absolutely amazing in getting the word out about this icon. You should pester him for one of these exceptionally beautiful bookmarks that has a sunset picture of the Cayucas Pier. And we look forward to getting that structure back where it should be. With that, Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Sarnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Thank you very much. We then come to presentations. I'd entertain a motion on presentations.
So moved. Second.
Thank you, Mr. Meacham and Mr. Hill. Another roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. It's my pleasure to read this resolution, and before I do, I wonder who is going to be here to accept it. I see Ms. Fong Wolf from the Community Foundation and also Mr. Ruiz, who I know would want to make some comment here. This is a resolution recognizing William Castellanos for being selected by the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County to receive the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for 2013. It reads as follows. Whereas the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award annually recognizes and rewards a local individual for outstanding efforts in advocacy and caring for local people in San Luis Obispo County. And whereas the Community Foundation San Luis Obispo County has selected William Castellanos to receive the 2013 Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for his sustained efforts on behalf of thousands of children and low-income families in the county by providing comprehensive, high-quality, early childhood education and care. And whereas, as director of the Community Action Partnerships Child, Youth, and Family Services Division, William Castellanos has brought state and national recognition to the migrant and seasonal Head Start programs in San Luis Obispo County. And whereas William Castellanos has served as a mentor and advocate for Head Start teachers to acquire higher education, which has resulted in 133 teachers receiving a Child Development Associate credential, 73 receiving associate degrees, 23 receiving bachelor's degrees, 7 receiving master's degrees, and 3 graduating from the UCLA Anderson School of Management program. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize William Castellanos for being selected by the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County to receive the Isabel P. Ruiz Humanitarian Award for 2013. Mr. Castellanos, if you would come. Circuit here, I think they want a photo.
Just on behalf of the Community Foundation, I'm Janice Fong Wolf, Director of Grants and Programs, and I just want to thank the Board of Supervisors for allowing us to honor and recognize one of your community residents for tremendous work and following in the footsteps of Isabel Ruiz. She was a personal friend of mine, so I'm so very honored that we've been able to establish this award on behalf of Bill Broadbent, a family member, a family friend of the Ruiz family, and we are going to be stewards of his dollars into the future. This was established in 2007, and it'll allow us to recognize and to encourage and support individuals who carry on in her memory and in her footsteps. This award comes along with this lovely resolution from the Board of Supervisors, a certificate of recognition from the Community Foundation, and a $1,000 award. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fong.
And I'd like to introduce David Ruiz, Isabel's son, to share a little bit about her.
I'd like to thank the board for letting us present this award. This is a very special honor for us as a family to honor another individual in this community that has been able to give of themselves so selflessly. My mother, as some of you know, she's been with this community and she's passed away since, but for over 30 years she's contributed numerous programs and organizations. She started the Breast Cancer Awareness Senior Health Clinics, and all of this being done with a selflessness, with looking for others and how we can help them. And that is what this award truly embodies, is the ability for one to put away their own needs and to look for those that others have and to find solutions for them, and then to dig through those and uncover other needs for other members of the communities and to continue forward with those. It's exactly what Mr. Castellanos has done. He not only uncovered one specific need with migrant workers, but he continued to go on and help other individuals. But more importantly, it's the inspiration that they provide to these other individuals. We heard of the numerous people that he helped. Now they will continue to go on and forward with their lives and hopefully help others. It's a chain reaction that we see, the countless people that they will continue to inspire and motivate, that will make a better community for not only ourselves in San Luis Obispo County, but throughout California and hopefully the world. Mr. Castellanos, thank you so much for everything you've done.
Mr. Castellanos, welcome, congratulations, and thank you for all the great work you've done.
Thank you, and I also like to thank the members who nominated me. I work for the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo, and we have so many staff, over close to 1,000 individuals who do the work every single day, who are champions of 10 counties. We're involved in 10 counties, and I really want to thank them for their work that they do every day that affects over 40,000 individuals each year. So on behalf of Community Action Agency, my family, and also Isabel Ruiz, I really want to thank the work that that we continue doing and working forward and helping individuals in our, not just our county, but in other counties. So again, thank you very much. I accept this with great, it's a great honor, and I really want to thank the members who nominated me. And I kept on saying, well, maybe now I have to change my ways. This is such an honor that you have to make sure that you always sort of always show the leadership and continue mentoring individuals. And it is hard work, but I think it's something that I enjoy. And again, I really want to thank the members of the Ruiz families for being here. I know of them. I worked with Isabel Ruiz for several years, and I know Napoleano, who is the husband, who's here with his family, and it's just a great honor to be here. Thank you very much. And also my staff, there are quite a few staff members.
I was wondering. I saw a lot of smiling faces out there, Mr. Castellanos.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Castellanos. Thank you and your staff for all the marvelous work that you do. With that, then, we come to public comment on items not on the agenda.
Let them get a chance to leave.
Pardon? Well, we'll get to it. We'll go with the slips that we have on the dais. We'll start with Eric Greening, followed by Dr. C. Height.
Hello again, and I'm still Eric Greening, and I certainly am also thankful to all of the mentors in our community. I wanted to give the news that in spite of the one-time cancellation of the waste confidence hearing that didn't happen during the federal government shutdown, we have just received word that it has been rescheduled. And so now it will actually be happening on Wednesday, November 20th. And I highly recommend attendance there at. I know I personally won't make it because it's the same evening as Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee, but I certainly urge members of your board and everyone in the community. It will, as had been planned before, be at the Marriott at the south end of San Luis Obispo with a sort of a meet and greet at 6 and then the hearing at 7. I also understand, I've heard through the grapevine, and perhaps this can be confirmed, that there will be a letter on your consent agenda November 5th that will be, I hope, asking for a speedy transfer from the fuel pools to dry cask storage of whatever is possibly ready to make that journey, whatever has cooled down enough to make that journey, because this is a very, very serious health threat in our county. And whether you attend the hearing or not, simply being heard in writing is very, very important. I did notice that when you had the hearing about the strategic planning session about the economic impact of Diablo Canyon and about the prospect of closing it, there were a number of concerned members of the public who were concerned about our economy and who were asking you to endorse the relicensing. And I would urge you not to put that on your agenda anytime soon, because that is a decision not to be made based on economic hopes, but on the actual data, which has not yet come forward and will not come forward for some time. And so I think it would be premature to be endorsing a relicensing when the information base on which that decision should be made is not in front of us. But I do encourage you to deal with the immediate emergency of spent fuel re-racked at 5 times the density it was designed for. That is a genuine safety threat to the people of our county. And I notice in our mission statement, safe comes even ahead of prosperous and well-governed as well as livable. So please do keep us safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Dr. Height, followed by Jeanette Watson.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos World Community Workshop. It is the way of man, I am told, that he that can't keep up with the tribe falls behind. The wolf eats the man, the wolf grows fatter. The tribe kills the wolf, more meat for them. It is now time to realize who is the wolf. The senior disabled demographic of Los Osos, the 5,000 households in the prohibition zone, recognize they are being left behind. Each supervisor, with the exception of our new supervisor, has received a citizen's complaint. The first day is Tuesday, October 15th. And you have assured the public and Supervisor Arnold there is a complaint process, so let's see how this is handled. October 14th, 2013, County of San Luis Obispo. This is an administrative citizen's complaint filed on behalf of myself and DOES 1 through 5,000. You may take the first steps to resolving my citizen's complaint by following the county policy and procedure and contact the complainant within 10 business days. Complaint. Number one, I object to the evacuation planning zone 5. Los Osos has a carless collection location of Vaughn Shopping Center identified as LOVR near 10th Street. I object because its collection location is unspecific to pedestrians and the Vaughn Shopping Center is not ADA compliant. And you got two pictures with that one attached. Therefore, persons pushing wheelchairs and independent citizens with mobility devices will be unable to access a sidewalk at either end of the shopping center and will be forced into the parking lot competing with vehicles, the vehicles attempting to evacuate. And it goes on and on. And I provided you my research. You know, I objected that you didn't put it on the agenda about the nuclear waste storage. But you touted the economic benefits of the nuclear power plant. Your number one economy is institutions of confinement. You profit from the suffering of your fellow man. And skipping around on my objections, I object that since making my public records request, a board member publicly expressed ignorance of the fact that San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors have responsibility, as the SLO County Supervisors did vote to uphold the Planning Commission's approval of, quote, independent spent fuel storage installation site at the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, approximately 6 miles north of the community of Avila Beach, 3rd District, end quote. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Height. Ms. Watson, followed by Ben DeFatto.
With the possible closing of Diablo Canyon Power Plant, it will leave the people with only solar power and wind power, unless the plan is to use natural gas and or biogas. Is your plan to close the Diablo nuclear power plant be coupled with joining the community choice aggregation plan? Many of us believe that there is a hidden agenda everywhere to restrict the county's development and impoverish the population by collapsing the economy and eventually moving all rural county populations into megacities. The people will then be managed by controlling our energy needs under the guise of climate change. Slowly, we, the people, are losing our freedoms of choice in America, and we are very concerned and frightened. But you board members are well aware of what's going on, as you have fallen prey to the federal government by pushing these new programs onto the citizens of this county with your smart growth, anti-sprawl, redevelopment plan, stack-and-pack housing, sustainable growth, wildlife corridors, and let's not forget Common Core education. These terms, plus many more, are all vague and fuzzy-sounding words to achieve the goal of control. It appears that you have become the bullies of the higher government as you work towards creating regional government. As you are aware, this is when state boundaries disappear and several states come under a mega-region for more central control. Currently, there are 11 mega-regions identified in the United States. You see, we all are doing research, believe it or not. If government entities can control our property rights, our food production, our modes of transportation, our water availability, and now our energy needs, we will all be captives in a system that begins to look like George Orwell's book, 1984. We, the people, must not let this happen. All of us must stand together against this insanity, because the leaders at the top win, and all of us, including you, lose everything.
Thank you, Ms. Watson.
Thank you.
Mr. DeFatto, followed by Julie Tacker.
Good morning, Board, Sheriff, and public. I'm Ben DeFatto from Torn Up and Noisy Los Osos, which, by the way, woke us up at 6 a.m. this morning. First, there are no sidewalks in 99% of the prohibition zone of Baywood and Los Osos. The other day on a Monday, there was a farmer's worker where many cars came from near and far to buy fresh vegetables and other items. Parking is usually at a premium for those 2-3 hours that they are open for business. Well, my car got stuck on 3rd Street, and with the aid of some wood, did manage to get out doing old hand-me-down old tricks. I was able to get out. What I was trying to say here is that 42 miles of streets times two sides of the street have the potential of many that park on the street of getting stuck in the loose sand due to disturbed sandy soil by the contractor's heavy trucks and heavy equipment. On top of that, what was not figured out was that if and when the rains come, the water will run into many homeowners' property doing some damage. Have you, Mr. Gibson Ogren, made allowances for what I have just highlighted for you and for you to do something about this situation? On another note, while shopping at Costco Sunday, I saw an abundance of dogs that are now allowed to come in on a leash, of course, to wander through all departments with their owners, including the food and meat departments. A clerk told me that she had even seen a snake wrapped around a man's neck the other day. My question to you is, how in the world did this get through the health department? I can understand that an owner that has been at work for 5 days and wants to spend the weekend with their animal, but where do we draw the line? When a store gets very crowded with people, like at Costco, people are not expecting something low to the ground that could stumble or even get bitten by an animal, making the store liable and maybe even making the city or county liable too. If you agree, please correct this problem as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Ms. Tacker, followed by Richard Margetson.
Good morning. I am Julie Tacker from District 2 in Los Osos, and Los Osos has been my home for 43 years. My dad was a builder, and when we first got to Los Osos, there were less than 2,000 people living there, much less. And I watched, as a child, my dad being a builder, how most of the homes in Los Osos were built and how we encountered a lot of sand. Today, the construction that's going on, we are encountering a lot of sand. And you've heard time and time again from people complaining that the sand after construction of the sewer is coming onto the streets and becoming a burden on the citizens. Last Friday, Supervisor Arnold, Supervisor Gibson, and much of the county staff was at a Healthy Communities workshop. And one of the things that we as planners keep an eye on is health in all policies. And I couldn't help sit there and watch and listen and think about my home and how backwards we're going. When we take away the walkability of our community and how it impacts the health of our community, even our socializing amongst our neighbors is impacted by the inability to get there. And you are the owner of the wastewater project. You, when I hire a contractor, just like you can, prioritize the project. Step in and say, clean up your mess. There are messes on every corner. Broken pipe, trash, signs that have been mangled and left, environmental fencing that is becoming part of the environment. It's been tossed with dirt and plants are growing on it. You need to check those contractors. We've asked for oversight. You have a construction management firm who's days away from getting a contract extension. They don't deserve a contract extension because they're not doing the work they need to do now. And check those contractors. Make them go back and clean up the town. They are guests in our community. We are paying a hefty price for them to be there. Yes, we expected inconvenience, but we did not expect to be trampled on and have our financial houses out of order because we can't get to work, we can't get to the store. It's impacting our lives.
Thank you, Ms. Tacker. Mr. Margetson, followed by Lindy Owen.
Richard Margetson and Mr. Gibson, it doesn't go unnoticed that I put my speaker slip in at the end for public comment, and you're calling me before other speakers. I know what's coming. I know who's in the room. I know what you have planned. It's interesting that some of those people that are going to be speaking actually didn't support you in your last election, so take that into consideration when they cheerlead for you. What I came today to talk about was, I appreciate again, Ms. Arnold, you bringing up the questions at the end of public comment about the outreach, the brochures, all of that. That was all promised. I don't care what Mr. Gibson says. It's on tape. There's meetings in Los Osos. There's meetings in this room. There were meetings before the Planning Commission of what the process was going to be up until they started digging holes. There was public participation all the way up until that point. But now it's almost like Mr. Gibson is paying for this project. And as you heard last week, we'll hear things when there's a need for public input. When there's a need for public input. Not requesting public input on issues. The last brochure came out in December of last year. The last town hall meeting of any significance was, it's got to be more than 2 years ago. The water conservation component of this project is a joke because there has been no community in the community outreach. I've mentioned, every one of you except the new supervisors heard me say a number of times, the CSD, the elected officials of that community, have offered repeatedly to allow staff and give a 15-minute update at the beginning of their meetings. Those meetings replay twice a day, every day of the month. 60 opportunities for staff to come. A CSD director actually talked to staff. Staff told him they would never be coming before the CSD to present. Opportunity in Los Osos was through the local advisory council, through Mr. Gibson. That's why there's issues. These things are starting to come to fruition. We keep bringing them up. We keep bringing them up. $46 million estimate on the treatment plant. When staff, wonderful staff, came in at $30 million. Wow. I hope that's not the best and the brightest the county has.
Thank you, Mr. Margetson. Ms. Owen, followed by Gretchen Clark.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from Dusty, Unlivable in Places, Los Osos. And yes, I do note that the speaker slips were flipped around, so we'll have the cheerleaders at the end. What I wanted to show again is I'm going to each week just bring you a little visit to Los Osos. This is on less than 1 mile of streets that I just drove around on Sunday and caught. This is what we get to live with because they're moving 20% ahead getting the pipes installed, and this is of no importance to even Mr. Gibson. If it doesn't look to there, here's a section that was fixed, and these people had to have complained because that's not what they're doing for most people. When you complain, they'll bring over this mismatched stuff. This one didn't get tamped down, so you'll see that the mailbox is now getting a rut, and it will only last for a short period of time. My problem is this is a dust and dirt problem everywhere. People can't park. We can't walk. When we get some rain, here's a great fire hydrant buried. When we get some rain, it's not going to be a pretty picture. And Mr. Gibson suggested that the rain would probably tamp it down and restore it back to its original state. I don't think so. We're asking for oversight. There appears to be none. The contractors are in charge of whether they take care of the job and do it correctly or not. And Mr. Gibson is not willing to step in, as far as I can tell, to do anything. So we've got, out of 20 miles that are completed, we've got about 10 miles of engineering that needs to be done, tamping down, some gravel needs to be brought in to restore these. This was all because equipment sat on it. Again, I also wanted to go to talk about the dewatering plan. There is The only dewatering that's going onto land is going over here to the old Tri-W site. Well, this site, $800,000 for the grading, the contouring, $60,000 for the replanting, which you'll notice didn't do well. The weeds are doing great because we've got some dewatering going. Of course, the path doesn't work. You can't even get through that section. But here's the way the plantings are looking today. And the problem is it's already overflowing. We have something like 12 other basins in Los Osos not being used for anything. The dewatering could be going into those basins so that it could get back into our upper aquifer. This was the promise when the dewatering was presented to the Coastal Commission. This is not what is happening today. Instead, Mr. Gibson and Mr. Ogren seem to assume that putting it into the bay, because it is cheaper, easier, and faster, is the correct method to go. So please find us some oversight for this nightmare project. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Ms. Clark, followed by Lou Ternatsky.
Gretchen Clark, Los Osos. Good morning. Supervisors Arnold, Gibson, Hill, Meacham, and Ray. Thank you for the opportunity to address you during this public comment period. My message this morning is simple. We're here, my husband and neighbors and I, to thank you for approving the Los Osos Wastewater Project and for your ongoing stewardship as the project moves forward. My husband Richard and I moved to Los Osos 19 and a half years ago in the midst of the building moratorium. When we bought our home, we were apprised of and accepted the need for a sewer project. Nearly two decades and many holdups later, we are pleased that the project is finally going forward. And I'd like you to know that many of us in the community share this appreciation. We are also here to thank Public Works Director Paavo Ogren and his staff for their hard work during the community input and design phases of this project, and for hiring such capable contractors. We have been impressed with the efficiency, professionalism, and courtesy of the ARB and WA RASIC construction crews, and we look forward to their continuing progress. Finally, Richard and I want to acknowledge you, Supervisor Gibson, for your sustained and sincere efforts on the behalf of our community. You have been even-handed and open to hearing all the voices of the community as we have traveled this difficult road. We appreciate that you continue to keep us informed about the status of the project. So to you and you, your supervisor colleagues, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Mr. Tornatsky, followed by Lynette Tornatsky.
Morning. My name is Lou Tornatsky. I'm a recently retired Cal Poly professor with some time on my hands and a Los Osos resident for 8 years. As we meet, our street's being dug up by machines about the size of my house. I'm pleased as punch. The contractors are extremely competent, professional. They're doing a great job. At the end of the day, they clean up their work setting, and we can move around in our community. That's all I've seen all over town. I personally wanted to thank the board for navigating some rough seas and enabling the Los Osos project. I also wanted to talk a little bit more about those rough seas. I'm a believer in the First Amendment to the Constitution. 50 years ago, when I was an Ohio State sophomore, fresh out of the Marines, I sued my college in federal court over the First Amendment, my rights to speak and listen. We eventually won. I hold those things really important. I've been saddened by the kind of public interaction that too often has been associated with the Los Osos project. Loud and sometimes insulting voices have diminished public dialogue. It seems to be the same few people, the unconsoled, who seem to show up for this meeting and the CSD meeting in Los Osos, plus my wife. So I wanted to thank the board for maintaining mostly restrained dialogue about Los Osos. Keep it up. I also wanted to encourage other Los Osians to show up here to speak and listen. While the term has become sullied by history, I believe there is a silent majority out there in Los Osos who really love this project, can't wait for it to be finished, and watch their property values increase. I hope more of them show up for this meeting. And as somewhat of a corrective to a previous speaker, I'm not a cheerleader. I was captain of the damn football team. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tanatsky. Ms. Tarnotsky.
Good morning. I'm Lynette Tarnotsky from the Los Osos Prohibition Zone. And I don't often speak here, but I do watch your meetings every week, either on TV or on my laptop. And I see how Los Osos has been represented at the podium by the speakers on the sewer topic. So I thought it was time to give you guys a different opinion of how the project is going. I think the project's going great. The construction started on our street last week, and watching the guys work is the best show in town. It's amazing how adept they are with those huge pieces of equipment. Of course, with any project this extensive, there are some inconveniences, and I've certainly run into them. But in my opinion, it's no big deal. The project is being done really well, and I feel no need to try to micromanage things. Some of us anyway are grown-ups, and the fact that we're getting a sewer, water conservation, and water cleanup at the end of this, well, this mitigates any inconveniences that we may have now. Everyone on the crews that I have interacted with have been unfailingly helpful, friendly, and very polite. The same with Ms. Hauser and the others in the office in Los Osos. I'd like to thank Mr. Gibson, Mr. Ogren, Mr. Waddell, Mr. Hutchinson, Mr. Diodati, and the many others on the county staff who have made this project possible. They have worked for us despite difficulties imposed on them by certain citizens. Last Friday, a local radio show had a segment on Los Osos, specifically on how the project was impacting people's daily lives. Some of the regular Los Osos speakers here called in, and you can imagine the comments. Well, actually, you've all heard them before. And other callers called in, and they had positive things to say. And when the radio host asked one of the negative callers why the positive caller had such a different opinion, that negative person replied, well, that person is someone who wanted a sewer. So if you ever wonder why the Los Osos projects takes up so much of your board time, it is punishment for voting to go ahead with the sewer. So please be patient with our town. Most of us don't want to rag on you and the county staff, but instead we want to thank you for getting this project going, and please keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tarnotsky. And with that, we'll close public comment for items not on the agenda. We're going to go to a short break. Mr. Hill, did you want to?
You wanted me to speak on Mr. Greening?
Yes, if you would speak to the Diablo Canyon issue, please.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In response to Eric's questions, and I know others, just two clarifications, one of which, of course, while we had a useful and productive meeting on a host of issues surrounding Diablo Canyon, of course, I think most people need to be aware that we don't have any authority over the future of the plant in terms of its relicensing or continued operation. When we do meet again to discuss some of the issues, I think we're still in the stages of trying to arrange a presentation from PG&E that hasn't been set yet. I think after that time, the board can consider a letter. But as I had mentioned at the time that the Mothers for Peace came to us, I was more than happy to write a letter as the supervisor of the district with the plant to express the legitimate concerns that the folks might have about some of the issues that have to do with the assembly rod storage and the pools and the transfer to the dry casks. So I've done that. I will be sending it to the NRC and also be giving it to them by hand when they come back to San Luis Obispo, and my office will be happy to make that letter available to anybody. I think we're already going to send it to the Mothers for Peace so that they have it as well. So that's where we are on the letter.
Very good. Thank you, sir. With no other lights on, we're going to go to a break right now. I need to conduct some business for the clerk, so we will reconvene at 10:15. Thank you, Madam Clerk. We will reconvene and get to the four items of our rest of our morning's agenda. Madam Clerk, if you would, please introduce the first one.
Item number 18, an update on state legislative activities by Paul Yoder and Karen Lang, Shaw Yoder Antwi Incorporated, and Peterson Consulting Incorporated, all districts.
Thank you. Hey, Mr. Yoder.
Good morning. Board members, thank you. You may notice...
No, it's patently obvious, you know.
That it's just me?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to own that just up front.
Did you get lost?
What? No. The good news is she's not lost. The bad news is she's a little under the weather, so she sends her regards, and sorry about that.
Our sympathies.
Yeah, appreciate that. So to the task at hand, the legislature is gone. They are in their interim recess. We are at halftime, if you will, between the first and the second year of this two-year session. The governor signed about 800 bills in late September and early October. He signed about 1,000 total. He vetoed, as you may have seen, close to about 11%. That's a little lower than most years, most governors. So there are two schools of thought on the governor's vetoes or lack thereof. One is that he's rubber stamping what the legislature is doing. Another is that he is actually telegraphing very well to the legislature what they should send him, what they should not send him, to the extent they're going to send him a bill, what form it ought to be in. We subscribe to the latter theory. I think the evidence for that is the governor reaching out to the legislature and saying, in several instances this year, pretty extraordinary, send me a bill. It's languishing in the legislature. If you can find the votes for it, send it to me, and I will actually sign that bill. And I can give you examples of that, but I think the board members are aware of them already. One of the bills that the governor did sign was the county's own sponsored AB 610 by Assemblyman Ashajian. That's another bill to help the county deal with costs that are associated with Atascadero State Hospital. Very grateful to the Assemblyman for authoring that bill and helping us continue to make sure that the county's insulated as much as possible from costs that relate to ash. This bill is going to allow for non-treatment costs associated with mentally disordered offenders to be billed to other counties, to the person's county of residence. And so that bill is law now, and that was a San Luis Obispo-sponsored bill. In terms of the state's revenues, we're up about $140 million through the first 3 months of the year. Importantly, the September revenues were over projections by $450 million, and that is important because September is one of the three biggest months of the year that you really want to watch, along with December and April for the tax year. So to be up $450 million in September seems to portend good news. However, as we all know, the federal government shutdown had effects. One of those effects that we may see here in California, especially with the possibility of another shutdown, is that in between the shutdown that happened and the shutdown that may yet happen, we have the holiday buying season in the state of California. And some of the forecasters in Sacramento have wondered out loud what's happening in D.C. or what's not happening in Washington, D.C., what that may do actually to the California economy and California state revenues. On the issue of prison overcrowding, as you may have seen yesterday in the press, the courts gave the state of California yet another month extension. That's on top of the month extension that we got a couple weeks ago. So the governor and the legislature have until February 24th now. I will just observe that at that point we will be 8 months into the current fiscal year. The legislature appropriated $315 million, possibly, to help the governor deal with sending another 9,000 people out of the state prison system. To date, we spent very little, if any, of that $315 million, and it's not clear at what point during the fiscal year that money may actually have to be spent if we're going to keep getting extensions from the courts. Looking forward to next year, the good news is there's probably not going to be another major realignment proposed for the counties, and after the last couple of years, we think that's good news. We do think it's going to be a reconstituted water bond. Probably see the current bond that's slated to be over $11 billion come down to somewhere more in the neighborhood of $6.5 billion and be placed on the November ballot. Politically, the Democrats finally will have for an extended period of time a true supermajority in the legislature. They will probably have that for just about the entire year. barring, God forbid, a death or even a resignation. What that will probably mean at a minimum is, again, looking forward to the November 2014 ballot, you will probably see measures placed there that would allow the voters statewide to lower the vote threshold for local needs, beginning with transportation, but possibly for a host of other measures, and lowering that threshold potentially from two-thirds to 55% if the voters go along. We do think you'll see other manifestations of the two-thirds supermajority in 2014. The mayor of San Jose and other mayors around the state are pursuing a new pension initiative. I want to bring that to the board's attention. Importantly, they are joined by the leading proponents of pension reform initiatives in the past, Mr. Dan Pellissier and Ms. Marcia Fritz. So everyone is basically behind the initiative that's currently being proposed by the mayor of San Jose, Chuck Reed. In addition to that, we do think there's going to be a marijuana legalization initiative potentially on the 2014 ballot. So I guess welcome to California. There's never any dearth of controversial issues in some, but we're happy that we are at this halftime in between the two legislative years. I'm happy to take any questions that the board members may have. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you, Mr. Yoder. You know, we do have questions. We have Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I forgot to bring this up. We got all tied up on insider baseball yesterday.
Yeah.
Could you comment briefly? There was, I believe it came from the governor's initiative I'm not sure if it was a piece of legislation on renewable storage. Renewable energy storage, and I may be catching you off guard on this. I know there was some action. I'm not sure if it came out of the administration or the legislature, which is asking the utilities now to provide or to start to look into means of storing energy that is part of their mandate. Do you have any available?
I think if I could,
yeah.
Through the chair to Mr. Hill, I think there's a large universe of renewables related legislation. I think if you just let me and Karen go back, maybe send you a report and we can make sure all the board members have it, CAO has it, just that is specific to renewables, and maybe highlight certain bills, because that one is not standing out from that big batch right now, but we will follow up for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, we're going to be following this water bond very closely. Obviously, the water issue is primary in California, but a strong focus here in San Luis County. Do you have any idea how we would benefit through this water bond?
Yeah. There are two bills currently, SB 42 by Senator Wolk and AB 1331 by Assemblymember Rendon. Assemblymember Rendon is the chair of the Assembly Committee. Senator Wolk has been active on water issues, and she's on the Senate Natural Resources Committee. Both bills, I think, for starters, the good news is, I think there is a deep appreciation in Sacramento now that the Central Coast probably could have done better in the existing water bond and been treated a little bit better, had more funding opportunities, relatively speaking, within that bond. I think that's going to be acknowledged in the next bond. That's the good news. The bad news is, as I've mentioned, as you know, the total is going to come down from $11 billion to $6.5 billion. There's a lot of talk about regional sustainability, regional self-reliance. There's a lot of talk about as much money as possible going through the IRWMP process, the IRWMP process, because that's something that there used to sort of be controversial in certain parts of the state, but it's something that a lot of folks statewide have grown more and more comfortable with, and it is a local stakeholder-driven cooperative kind of process. So I think there are things like that that can be very helpful to the Central Coast. There are absolutely discussions about pots of money that could help disadvantaged communities, and how that definition is written, you know, just how you define disadvantaged is something we're going to be working on. I think the Central Coast and San Luis is going to want to watch very well. And then last but not least, there are discussions about pots of money for parts of the state that are having groundwater problems. So, and obviously we're trying to encourage those discussions as much as we can.
I think if we could have all the money from that high-speed rail, we'd fix our California water problem. Having said that, one other issue relative to the state hospital that you mentioned, I know that we've heard from our sheriff locally that some of the costs to us
basically because if somebody violates there, then they're sent down here, and then they have to be shipped back there.
Right.
What type of legislation would be required to have a place to keep them there as opposed to the transport back and forth and save the county some money?
Yeah, there is another bill sponsored by Assemblymember Ashajian, AB 1340, that we, Karen and I, have been working on a lot with CACHO's office, with the State Department of Hospitals. The goal of that bill is exactly what you just described, Supervisor, is to because it's not just the counties that have raised concerns; it's the psychiatric techs and other folks, hosts of folks. The state understands that what the counties are enduring long-term isn't viable. They also, though, understand that they're not set up today, you know, at Ash or at Napa State Hospital, at Patton, at Coalinga, to remedy the problem from the county perspective overnight. So discussions are ongoing. We're working really, really hard on that. I can tell you that we recently got a small group of staffers to tour the Napa County Jail. It's closer for the staffers to get there and for them to get a better understanding of the extent to which the Napa State Hospital impinges upon the Napa County Jail. We were very clear that, and the staffers understand that it's a San Luis problem. It's a Fresno problem. We don't represent San Bernardino yet. No, I'm just joking. And they understand that it's a problem, and it needs fixing. They went sort of excruciatingly through the list of people that were in the jail, and if they were from the state hospital, the staffers wanted to know how they got to the county jail, why they got to the county jail, what happened to them when they got in the county jail. So we're encouraged.
Okay.
We really are. But there's no magic wand fix. I got to say, before I'm done answering this question, it's going to cost the state some money to fix the problem. To get that, it's just going to take them a little time.
Thanks, Paul. Thank
yeah.
you, Chair.
Yep. Yep.
Very good. Ms. Arnold.
Yes. Thank you, Paul, for being here. My question was about, we have several areas of our county where our citizens have, for the last couple of years now, paid that SRA fire fee. And that was implemented as a fee, and I know there's been talk about it being more legitimized as a tax with the majority able to vote on the two-thirds majorities. Can you kind of update us on what's happening with that?
Yeah, can I work a little bit backwards?
Thank you.
On the legitimizing or re-legitimizing and the possibility that because there is this operational two-thirds supermajority that another bill might come through. We, along with some other folks, have been trying to ensure that if there is a bill to try to do that, that there actually still aren't the votes, despite the fact that the supermajority may be in existence. I mean, the fact of the matter is the opposition to the fee in this current legislature has actually become somewhat of a bipartisan, bicameral issue. And so hopefully a new bill isn't something that we have to worry about in 2014. There's a court case pending. The Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association feels pretty good about it, although I have to tell you, I did hear a rumor the other day that there's a possibility that when the court renders a decision, their decision may say that it really only applies to folks who filed a protest prior to the litigation, rather than a decision that would just affect everyone who has received a bill. And I'm sure the board members appreciate the distinction there. And so that may cause more litigation beyond that. But Howard Jarvis is litigating it, and they expect to succeed on some level. And I think the court decision will probably be out in about 3 or 4 months, is our understanding.
Thank you for that update.
Yeah.
Ms. Rabe.
I kept deciding whether or not I wanted to answer this question because Frank asked the question I wanted to ask. Can you just expand upon going back to the water issue?
Yeah.
You said the Central Coast could have been treated better. Can you put that in a little bit more specific terms as to how we could have been treated better, or specifically what we're getting right now or what we're not getting right now?
Yeah, it's more just a general proportionality, and I may not be able to do that for you in any discreeter than the population. The majority of the population in the state is to the south, and I would say that the current $11 billion bond is based more on the state's population, and I think board members can understand why that might be the case. There are a lot of people who have observed, are observing, will observe that that population doesn't necessarily equal water problem, and that with a state this big, with issues as diverse as we have here, that that the money could be spread more geographically, more than on, say, a per capita basis. And, you know, to boil it down, I mean, the water bond does have some money that would go towards, or could go towards, habitat restoration that would be sort of in conjunction with the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which is being put forth by the Metropolitan Water District, Kern Water, and some other folks, to, you know, ultimately, you know, in connection with some kind of north-south conveyance. There is money in the bond for habitat restoration connected to that, on top of just money in pots to help construct things statewide. I want to be clear, there's not any money in the existing bond to construct a peripheral facility. There isn't. Some people will tell you that there is. There isn't. But there is money in the water bond to do the habitat restoration that would assist with the habitat conservation plan that sort of envelops the conveyance. So it's a wonderful subject to discuss. So
carry on.
So going forward.
So I look forward to you expressing your dissatisfaction with my incomplete answer.
No. Well, then, just to kind of put it into a nutshell and going forward, because the purpose of your visit here is to talk about how we're going to go forward.
Yep.
And so it sounds to me like what as a county, what we need to be encouraging our legislators to do going forward into the next session is to get bills that have to do with water that are based rather on need or rather on basin or where the source of the water is rather than on population.
Right.
So that would be the focus that we need to make sure gets into the next round.
Absolutely. If I could just do the chair, if we're talking about 2014, we're talking about 5 years after the last water deal, 5 years after this water bond was originally conceived. Obviously, a lot has transpired statewide. Obviously, a lot has transpired locally. And I just think a reconstituted water bond is going to be more reflective of the issues that exist around the state in 2014 rather than the issues that existed 5 years ago. So, and they're a little more geographically dispersed and better understood.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Yoder, just a couple questions, thoughts from me. I was wondering about the dynamic of the two-thirds supermajority and the governor being more restrained in the matter of spending. There's a lot of discussion as to whether he was the last grown-up left in Sacramento. And I was, as we are getting ready to gear up for another budget coming out in January, do we feel that this has been settled to some extent? It seems like he imposed considerable amount of discipline on the budget process this year.
Yeah, no, I think one way to put it, Mr. Chairman, would be that this legislature gets it. They understand where the governor's willing to go, where the governor's not willing to go. The Speaker of the Assembly actually talks on a fairly regular basis about even if more revenues materialize than were projected in the last budget, that the state needs to build an even healthier reserve. The state needs to get on sounder footing because even if you just look at the internal borrowing, it's lessened. Compared to 3 years ago, but it's still fairly significant.
But those reserves being particularly important because although a few people talk about a comprehensive reform of the tax system to make it less volatile, I don't see that's not a sexy topic and one likely to get legs, or is it?
I don't think in an election year in 2018, I don't think so. Right. I think it's still out there. Everybody, if anything, the extent to which the state's finances rise and fall with the top earners in California, if anything, that is more the case today than it was even, before Proposition 30 was passed, that's for sure.
Okay.
So I do think the legislature understands that the governor's not going to go spend a sizable amount more and augment a lot of programs. There's one thing I want to make sure that especially the public understands, but for the board too. If we wake up in January, the governor just proposes new state budget, and he says, you know, we got $5 billion that we didn't anticipate in June when we put the last budget together. The public schools in California, because of the economic downturn, were owed an enormous sum of money, just shy of $12 billion, pursuant to Proposition 98. This last state budget allowed a repayment of that, several billion dollars worth of repayment. But if you ask the legislative analyst, you know, sort of what happens if another $2 billion or $3 billion or $4 billion comes in, the legislative analyst will tell you, because of Prop 98, it's pretty much all going to go to the public schools in California. So the governor gets that, legislative leadership gets that as well.
And then jumping outside of the pure legislative process, the Mayor San Jose's budget or pension reform proposal, is there any sense of the substance of that?
Yeah, it's apologies for oversimplifying, but it essentially would allow local governments to change formulas going forward, not retroactively,
right,
but going forward. And that's to say that that's it in a nutshell would be a huge understatement, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last thing, Paul, and this goes back to the realignment issue. With the federal requirement to reduce the population in our prisons, obviously we're going to get more out here. How are they anticipating handling that from a local law enforcement standpoint statewide?
The if you don't mind me talking about the Los Angeles Board of Supervisors very briefly.
Briefly.
Right. That's as long as I want to talk about them as well. But they last Tuesday had their chief of probation, had someone from the sheriff's office. I mean, had, you know, their staff there, and they said, what happens? You know, let's say the courts don't give us an extension. What happens? What happens to us? And their chief of probation said that their understanding from the state was that when and if another 9,000 state prisoners had to be released, that they would be under the supervision of state parole and that they would not be expected to be county responsibility. Having said that, SB 105, which was a deal agreed to by the legislature and the governor, appropriated $315 million and it created two paths. Path number one was courts don't give extensions. Path number two was court gives extensions. Still not clear exactly how that's going to pan out. A chunk of that $315 million could come to the counties for probation-related services for some segment of that 9,000 inmate, you know, formerly state inmate population. But it's really in flux, Supervisor. And you know, if you read the LA Times today, 20% of the AB 109 population in LA County is unaccounted for. So, I mean, it's that's just me quoting the Los Angeles Times. It's in flux. The governor is his level best. The good news is they appropriated over $300 million. If the courts take them down a certain path, and the good, and you know, part of that good news is the counties can expect to see a chunk of that money.
And
thank you.
Yeah, I think Supervisor Meacham is more worried than when he asked the question.
I was just thinking that myself, Mr. Chairman. Yep.
With that, I will open it to the public. I do have one request to speak, Mr. Greening.
Thank you. Eric Greening, and since you're reporting on court cases as well as legislative matters, knowing that a court recently found the High Speed Rail Authority had violated the public trust in terms of not living up to the wording of the proposition the voters approved, why isn't there an injunction stopping this mess until we can get it properly sorted out, and what would it take to get such an injunction? Knowing that if we were to bond for the full cost of this monstrosity, it would be an enormous expense to the taxpayers of this county and deliver us nothing, and probably would end up eating away at just about everything the schools are going to get back when you look at 30 years of bond repayment with interest. I think we need to be very strenuously in opposition to this ramrod going down the Central Valley. That said, the main reason for what has been called CEQA reform, I think, is probably the governor's agenda to try to ram this thing through with as little mitigation for the enormous impacts as possible. So I do want to get back to the CEQA reform issue, because it was very illuminating what Mr. Hutchinson said this morning, that in terms of the actual obstacle part,
of getting things through the regulatory process, he finds CEQA itself is a very small part of that. And so I would like to suggest language for our legislative platform that you can actually look up in the SLOCOG board packet from the June meeting, page C-1, dash bottom of 11 and top of 12. And this is language that was voted on by the Citizens Transportation Advisory Committee relative to the SLOCOG position on this. Quote, closely monitor bills that propose to reform the California Environmental Quality Act to support reducing redundant steps and requirements while opposing measures that would deprive decision makers of information needed to make wise decisions or deprive communities of just and reasonable mitigation of significant impacts. My understanding of what happened in this year's legislature was CEQA reform primarily culminated in ramming a sports arena into downtown Sacramento with as little mitigation to the public as possible, and the rest is just sort of vestigial organs attached to that, but perhaps you could clarify. Maybe you can put it in somewhat more moderate language than I just did. In any event, I think we need to be very, very careful about any CEQA reform bandwagon we jump on, because it's mostly just naked cronyism, and the real regulatory hurdles tend to be elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. We will close it to public comment and bring it back for any further comments. Mr. Yoda, on the question of CEQA reform, anything lurking on the horizon?
Yeah, no, I just want to, through the chair, I want to make sure that was okay to do that. SB 741 by Senator Steinberg, the pro tem of the state Senate, was the CEQA reform bill. It's a two-year bill. The bill to assist in the development of the new arena for the Sacramento Kings was SB 743, also by Senator Steinberg. That bill was signed into law. Some of the issues that were in 741 sort of crosswalked over into SB 743, and just perhaps a little ironically, most of them pertain to public transit and infill. And I think, you know, I would just observe that watching the CEQA debate, just if I could step up to 40,000 feet, Mr. Chair, one person's CEQA exemption is another person's into the world, and so whether it's high-speed rail or peripheral tunnels, you know, any major project in California, I think the governor's very aware, and the legislature, the leadership of the legislature, are very aware of what CEQA reform, so-called CEQA reform legislation, could mean for some really high-profile issues in California. And so the debate is ongoing. I don't know if private sector interests, who used to talk about putting an initiative on the ballot, will try to rejoin that effort or not. But just the discussion continues in Sacramento.
Very good. Well, seeing no other requests from my colleagues, I will thank you very much. And please, again, send our best wishes to Ms. Lang for a speedy recovery.
Thank you.
I do know that this was sort of couched as an overview of where we are as we enter the next cycle here. You and Ms. Lang are tracking those specific items that we really haven't touched on, like property tax deferral for seniors and things like that. Yep. And we look forward to our ongoing interaction with you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks for making the trip, Paul.
Thank you. Appreciate. Take care.
With that, Madam Clerk, would you introduce our next item, please?
Item number 19, request for an authorization to process the land use ordinance amendment application, LRP 2011-00017, Green Canyon LLC, to amend sections 22.112.040 of the South County Inland Planning Area Standards to eliminate a restriction on grazing animals on a 22-acre site located at the southern terminus of Woodhaven Way along Sunnybrook Lane, approximately 2 miles southwest of the community of Napomo.
Ms. Orton.
Good morning, Chairman, Gibson, and members of the board. Nancy Orton, County Planning. This is a request to change the land use ordinance of the County General Plan. And as you know, the first step when considering requested changes to the plan or the land use ordinance is to come before your board for authorization as to whether or not to proceed. So Brian Pedrotti is the staff planner, and he will give the presentation.
Morning, Mr. Pedrotti.
Morning, Chairman Gibson and the Board of Supervisors. Again, Brian Pedrotti, staff planner. This is the Green Canyon Land Use Ordinance Amendment Authorization Project. And the project is to authorize the processing of a land use ordinance amendment to amend a specific section of the South County Inland Area Planning Standards, and specifically to eliminate a restriction on grazing animals on a 22-acre site. Now, the project is located approximately 2 miles southwest of the community of Napomo at the southern terminus of Woodhaven Way along Sunnybrook Lane. It's within the rural residential land use category, and it was changed to residential rural from agricultural in 2002 with a general plan amendment. There are four existing residential parcels on the site, approximately 5 acres each. If you look at the aerial, to the east is the proposed site of Jack Reddy Park, which has been proposed and approved, but not yet constructed. The Oso Flacco Valley is down to the south and includes a lot of productive cropland. Again, the property was agricultural in 2002, and a general plan amendment was approved to change it to residential rural. And in those standards that were established with the general plan amendment, there were, at the time, the owner chose to forego a floristic survey, a botanical survey, and instead agreed to vegetation removal restrictions. And one of those related restrictions was a restriction on grazing animals on the site. There were others that are still there. A botanical report is required prior to vegetation clearance. Equestrian activities were limited to the existing bluff equestrian trail. And there was a prohibition on vegetation removal below the edge of the bluff top. After the property was changed to residential rural, it was subdivided into four parcels in 2005, actually approved in 2005 and recorded in 2008. And the steep part of the Mesa Bluff area was put into an open space easement. The existing public equestrian trail on the south edge was put into an easement as well, and then the map was also approved with connecting equestrian trail easements from Woodhaven Way to the Bluff Trail. And what this essentially set up was a situation where grazing animals were allowed to cross the property both east and west and north-south, but the restriction still remained on the property for no grazing animals for the whole property. So the applicant has come in and proposed a change to that specific standard to eliminate the grazing animals. Land use ordinance amendments, we look to the framework for planning to guide their approval, and particularly their consideration of the surroundings, the residential design, and safe circulation. Residential design and safe circulation, the first one is really regarding designs for proposed residential uses, and the second is for safe vehicular and pedestrian movement. So they don't particularly apply to this LUO amendment. In the case of consideration of surroundings, it identifies there should be a maximum consideration of the characteristics of the project site and its impact on surrounding uses, and that includes flooding, vegetation, slope stability, views, things like that. There was, staff's response to that particular issue is that there could be potential impacts to existing plant species, and if authorized, the initial study will be done per CEQA and will evaluate those impacts. The applicant has submitted a biological assessment, and it's been preliminary reviewed by the county biologist and will be used in the environmental review. And so the staff recommendation is kind of a one of two things, is either to authorize it for processing or to not authorize for processing. And that
one or the other.
Either
or
one.
You're forcing us
right.
to make a choice. Right. Mr. Pedrani. Thank you, sir. To the supervisor of the district, Ms. Ray.
Thank you. Well, first of all, if you take we took a trip out there and walked the site and checked all the surroundings, and we braved walking on the equestrian trail. And I think it's important to recognize that we're not, if the board so chooses today, we're not making the general plan amendment change today. All we're doing is we're authorizing the due process for the landowner to go through. So what's going to be at odds is not going to be the actual use at the property. In fact, the surrounding uses are all equestrian. The homes around there have stables, and so that's definitely in character with the neighborhood. The thing that will be at issue is, of course, the part that they chose not to go through when they came through before, which is the biological study. So we'll know more as it goes through the process as to whether or not there are protected species that we need to deal with and whether or not the effect on those species is mitigatable. But at this time, I would recommend that we go ahead and allow this to be processed and allow the landowner the chance to go through that process to see what happens.
We'll look forward to a motion on that matter shortly. Seeing no other questions from colleagues, I will open it to the public. Have one request to speak, Mr. Chris Hellenius.
Thank you, members of the board. My wife and I are the owners of the property. Green Canyon LLC is a company that we have that holds ag land in our county, in Santa Barbara County, and I prepared a short speech here to try and stay within the 3 minutes. I think that I want to say at the outset, I agree with everything that Mr. Pedrotti has said here, and I thank you, Ms. Ray, for your comments as well, but there's more to this story, and I think it's a compelling story. I know this is a little premature because we'll get into the merits of this proposal down the road, but I want to say the following. When we began the process of seeking entitlements to Green Canyon LLC's property on the Napomo Mesa, we sought to alter the zoning from ag to rural residential for the 22 acres that comprised the Mesa Top and Bluff Face portion of our property. We used the lower 62 acres in agriculture, in intensive row crop ground, and we have never wanted to see that changed. We represented ourselves through the general plan amendment application process and received unanimous approval from the Board of Supervisors when the matter came up for hearing. In fact, Supervisor Cacho was very pro the project. And so, as your staff can verify, we've been quite generous in this process. We've done a number of things that need to be pointed out here. And number one, we did the open space easement. Number two, we did the bluff trail easement, which, you know, a project this small and its impacts wouldn't, you know, it's open question whether that could really be legally required, but we went further than that. And what we did was we said our neighbors have been so gracious in the process that we wanted to do something nice for them. The county staff never asked us for the connection between the end of Woodhaven Way and the Bluff Trail, and we wanted to promote the equestrian nature of that community. So on our own, what we did was we said we're going to dedicate another easement so that the people in that neighborhood can get access to the Bluff Trail. And we'd like to see that all integrated down the road with other projects that come online. In any event, we made one mistake in processing this application for a general plan. Like I said, we did this on our own without the benefit of engineers. And being somewhat inexperienced in these matters, I agreed to a restriction in the language in the general plan amendment that prevented grazing animals. The mistake I made was that I put the cart before the horse. I should have had a biologic survey done to see if we even needed that language, but I didn't. So rookies pay for their errors, and that process or that payment being exacted is to go through the general plan amendment process all over again. So here we are. we get the biologic survey done during the parcel map app, and it shows that there are no protectable species, that the area has been invaded by veldgrass, and so the restriction was never needed in the first instance. So there it is. It sits, and we'd like to see it removed, and so we request that you authorize this. I want to point out, lastly, that we've been very helpful to the people at Jack Reddy Park. You know, we embraced the idea, and we've helped them save a lot of money. I've turned over my engineering studies to them. I've turned over my water surveys, my well logs, so that they didn't have to do their own studies. We've saved those people a lot of money in the process and facilitated it for them. So, lastly, Supervisor Ray has already pointed out that the area is surrounded with rural residential lots of 5-acre size with horses on them and intensive equestrian use. So I think it's a bit ironic that we're the only people in the neighborhood who can't have horses. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you, Mr. Hellenius. With that, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Ms. Ray?
Well, as long as you're starting with me, I'd like to make a motion that we authorize processing of the land use ordinance amendment. Do you need me to read this all carefully?
No. Second.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. With that, I do believe we can take this on a voice vote. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, none. And we're off to the races here, as it were.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hellenius, for coming. With that, Madam Clerk, our next item, please.
Item number 20, hearings to consider two proposals to amend existing agricultural preserves, districts 1 and 4.
Thank you. Ms. Orton again.
Yes, Nancy Orton, and this item is actually now down to one proposal because the second proposal was withdrawn. That was noted in your staff report, and so I'm going to have Terry Waller present the staff report on the Peter Clark request.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Waller.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Terry Waller, planning staff. This is file number AGP 2013-00002. It is a proposal by Pete Clark to amend an agricultural preserve to decrease the minimum parcel size for conveyance of parcels from 640 acres to 320 acres. The property includes approximately 2,432 acres. And is located in the agricultural land use category at 2121 Shed Canyon Road, approximately 2 miles southwest of the community of Shandon. The property is part of Shandon Agricultural Preserve Number 1, which was established in 1971. It covers many properties and an extensive area around Shandon. The current use of the property is for irrigated vineyard, but mostly for grazing land. The vast majority of the acreage is actually for grazing land. The property to the north and the east is planted in vineyard, and to the west and south is mostly grazing land. The property, the amendment is based on the change in the minimum parcel size standard in the rules of procedure for rangeland properties from 640 acres in the old days to 320 acres. This actually wasn't a recent change. It's actually been in place for at least over 10 years. The property meets the current eligibility requirements for a rangeland agricultural preserve since it has over 320 acres of gross acreage and more than 100 acres, approximately 1,585 acres, of class 4, 6, and 7 soil that is described in the soil survey as moderately to well suited as rangeland. The appropriate minimum parcel size for the amended agricultural preserve is 320 acres based on the rangeland use and soils ratings. And the appropriate term is 10 years because that is the existing contract term at this time. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval of this request to amend this agricultural preserve. Good board.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Mm-hmm. Questions? Seeing none, I'll open it to the public. I have a slip from Ms. Kirk indicating availability for questions. Seeing none, we'll close it to the public. And no other requests to speak. We'll close it to the public. Bring it back to the board. Mr. Meacham.
I move staff recommendation to approve.
I'll second.
Thank you, Ms. Arnold. And with that, I think we do need a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. All right. Madam Clerk, why don't you go ahead and introduce the next item.
I've got a question. We'll Do you guys got to withdraw the application?
I think because it didn't come before us and it was agendized as withdrawn, it is withdrawn and we're done.
Okay.
Duly noted.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Waller. Appreciate it.
Next item is item number 21, a hearing to consider a resolution amending 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012, and 2013 action plans for HUD grants, allocations of general fund support, and social services funds for homeless services.
Thank you. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to recuse myself on this item and will return before we... What, are we doing the hanging?
Yes. We'll return for the hanging.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Mr. Lilly.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Before we get started, I do want to pass down the road a replacement for attachment 2 in your item today. First, assure you that there's nothing wrong with the numbers, the many numbers that are in the staff report, but the resolution that implements those changes didn't include the tables, all of the tables which are in the staff report. So this exhibit is much more complete. Also wanted to some degree apologize for the complexity of this item. Staff did consider breaking it into smaller, separate items on the agenda, but they're so intertwined, we concluded that might not be a good idea. There are several themes that we're trying to, accomplish today. One is to manage the county's risks and costs, as well as the risks to our nonprofit partners in administering federal grants, because that's become more challenging. And so in order to do that, the strategy we're employing and recommending to you today would be, creative allocation of the general fund support to homeless programs that your board has already adopted so that the smaller nonprofits with less capacity to cope with HUD's requirements can receive general fund money instead of HUD money. That's one theme. Another, of course, is to respond to direction your board gave staff on March 5th when the 2013 action plan was adopted relating to the homeless shelter in Atascadero, ECHO, and possibly a source of revenue being the Oceano Drainage Project. And finally, the other theme is to reallocate funds from projects as needed, just that aren't moving forward. So I believe that Suzanne Adai will be giving the lead presentation today. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. Suzanne Adai, Planning and Building. We're here today to ask you to approve a number of funding recommendations. Just a little bit of a background, that we came to your board on March 5th to approve the 2013 action plan based on estimated home CDBG and ESG funds. In May, HUD notified the county of the actual allocations, and we made changes to the 2013 action plan with the final allocations, and as part of our request, we're asking you to approve the final 2013 action plan. You can refer to Exhibit A that has the detailed allocations for each HUD program. Here are the amendments. So we amended the 2013 action plan for the final allocations, and staff is recommending reallocating unused prior year CDBG funds and program income to ECHO's project, that is the Homeless Shelter Rehabilitation Project, and the 16th Street sewer line improvement in San Miguel. Now, for the 2013 action plan, or in 2013 home funds, we have home funds, 2013 home funds that are unallocated, and plus funds from an original award to the Paso Robles Housing Authority that we recommend for the San Luis Obispo Housing Authority for the tenant-based rental assistance program. And the Paso Robles Housing Authority, they declined the award because they're understaffed and they're unable to expend the funds. Now going to the homeless services. For homeless services, we received a reduced ESG funding level for 2013. And as a consequence, the HSOC, that's the Homeless Services Oversight Council, in its September meeting, approved ESG funding level or funding recommendations, as well as allocations of general fund support and funds coming from the Department of Social Services for projects related to homeless services. HSOC's approval of these recommendations is in keeping with HUD's guidance to reduce the number of contracts that the county administers for its ESG program. I also would like to note that the county in the past has practiced allocating general fund support for those nonprofits that find it challenging to comply with federal grant programs. The county may continue its practice of providing discretionary funds to these nonprofits in the future. Now, with your board's meeting on March 5th, your board directed staff to look for other funding options for ECHO's projects. We have additional 2013 CDBG funds and also unused prior year CDBG money plus program income that we recommend for ECHO's project, and that's, again, the Homeless Shelter Rehabilitation Project. And staff recommends no change in funding level for the Oceano Drainage Improvement Project. With that, staff recommends that your board approve the attached resolution amending the action plans, approve the general fund support allocation, and a budget adjustment request to transfer funds from the Department of Social Services to the Planning Department for Homeless Services. This concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Erdai. We'll go to questions from colleagues. Ms. Ray?
Real quick, regarding the Oceano Drainage Improvements, and I noticed that you just said that you don't recommend any change to that funding. What percentage of the project is being funded through these funds?
So we have allocated $417,000 in 2013 CDBG funds for the Oceano Drainage Improvement Project.
Right. What's the total cost of the project is what I'm asking.
The total cost, Tony, if you, yes.
Tony Navarro, Planning and Building. You know, today we have Mr. Jeff Lee from Public Works who could specifically, I'm sure, address the percentages.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks.
Good morning. Jeff Lee from your Public Works Department. I'm the project manager for the Oceano Drainage Project. The specific question that you asked was the overall project budget is approximately $2.7
million.
Mm-hmm. CDBG funds of 2011 were awarded to this project in approximately $190,000. And then this recommendation, if it moves forward today, would be for 417. So that is a little over 600,000. So what's that, about somewhere between a fourth and a fifth?
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Yeah, and I probably should have looked deeper into this, but I'm kind of wondering the amount of funding that's going to Maxine Lewis and Prado Daycare. What exactly is going to be done with this funding?
Okay, I'll have Morgan Terrell to answer your question.
Morgan Trail Planning Staff. So the general fund support is usually used for operations of the shelter. And I think Capsule is here too. They could probably speak if you want more detail. But we have performance measures in each of the contracts. And so they instead of usually direct client services, it's usually operations of the shelter.
So it's not for any structural or any type of infrastructure improvement at all? It's all operational
Correct.
Costs?
That's our general fund contribution.
Correct.
Right. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other questions, we will open it to the public. I have a number of requests to speak, starting with Pearl Munak, followed by Susan Warren.
Thank you. I'm Pearl Munak, president of Transitional Food and Shelter Incorporated. And we urge you to adopt this staff recommendation as the best which can be done this year. It does provide the Paso Robles grant to ECHO, which will provide casework for our clients, which will help them to move through our program faster. So that we can do more with less funds for rent, which is our principal expense. We have many clients who will not get well. They will continue to need 24-hour shelter because they have degenerative diseases or even terminal diseases. And these persons need to get into permanent housing, and they're extremely low income. It's one of the most difficult things in the county to do, but the ECHO caseworkers are very good at it. We this year are going to be having a shortfall of funds, tens of thousands of dollars, which would have come from CDBG, which we will not be getting. And this affects our ability to pay rent for client shelter. We'll have to dedicate our funds, first of all, to maintaining the six apartments which we do have, which are among the lowest rent apartments in the county, and we need that. The overflow goes into motels, and we have already had, in a few instances, had to deny services for the first time in a long time to eligible clients. When a hospital social worker calls, they've got a patient needs to be released from the hospital, no longer needs hospital care, but needs rest at home, but doesn't have a home. And we have to say no to that. That is a very desperate situation. So we urge you to implement next year a plan to make up for the loss of CDBG funds to small organizations like us who can no longer receive CDBG funds. We are unable to apply for CDBG for the next year because one of the requirements in the application is, what is your plan to do HMIS data entry? Our plan used to be that there was a grant of $11,000 to go to CAPSLO under ESG funds, which would have provided casework for the other half of our clients, plus HMIS data entry for all of our clients. However, that was based on the idea that there would be $11,000 left over in ESG funds, and there wasn't because it was cut. And so we don't have that.
Thank you, Ms.
So with our budget, all of the funds that have been cut would have gone for rent, for client shelter, would have gone for motel rooms for the overflow.
Okay.
Because we have very few other expenses.
Okay. We understand.
Thank you.
And thank you, Ms. Munak, and thank you for the work that Transition Food and Shelter does. Ms. Warren, followed by former Supervisor Jim Patterson.
Thank you, supervisors, and glad to be here. I'm Susan Warren with North County Connection, and again, as a small nonprofit such as Pearl has, we have no paid staff at this point, and the original allocations that came from CDBG, I think it was 09 and 11, totaled $78,614, and we understand that's going back. That was for property acquisition. There was another $55,000 that was through the city of Atascadero. We were hoping that if that has to go back also, because it's got some conditions on it that we just can't meet through our small organization similar to Pearl's. And a new one that was added was that we would have to do this renovation to our low-income unit, which is a condition of the in-lieu fees that we got from the city of Atascadero through sealed bids and prevailing wage. And we've had, you know, part of what we're doing has been predicated on donated work from some licensed contractors that were willing to help us. Well, this we wouldn't be able to do. So I'm hoping with it, what you've come up with, that through general fund, that there's some money that can help us with this one-time requirement on this. We would certainly appreciate it. And I wanted to, I've got a minute here to let you know also that I attended the community design workshop last Friday, and I know Supervisor Arnold was there and former Supervisor Patterson. There was a question that I asked at the end of this about the healthy communities and some of the planning that went into that. And what I asked the two gentlemen was, as we're planning these healthy communities, what about transitional housing, sober living environments, wet housing and reentry housing, and would that be something that would fall into this community design, and to not have them clustered to create areas in our communities that weren't as healthy as being able to plan and have them integrated within the community. And I was really happy to hear that he said that was a wonderful creative idea, and if our county could look at that as part of our planning, that we would be way ahead of the game and pretty much a model for the state. So I urge you to think about that as we're doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Warren. Mr. Patterson, followed by Steve Tanaka.
Thank you, Supervisor Gibson, members of the board. If I may, Mr. Chairman, just briefly address Ms. Ray and welcome her to the Board of Supervisors. I'm sure you'll find your service both challenging and rewarding, and I very much appreciate you accepting the appointment. I'm here this morning really to encourage the board to support staff's recommendations on the allocation of CDBG, home, and ESG grants, as well as the additional county funding from the general fund and Department of Social Services. I support the recommendations in Agenda Item 21. I'm going to speak primarily to the homeless services allocations, though I do support the other recommendations as well. As a former member of the Economic Opportunity Commission, now the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo County, CAPSLO, and as a current member of the Homeless Services Oversight Council and the El Camino Homeless Organization, I know how challenging it is to meet the needs of the homeless population. In addition to that, we have these ever-increasing requirements put on jurisdictions by the federal government in the allocation of these grants. And we're fortunate to have the staff we do in Dana and Tony and Morgan and Suzanne, who have literally become experts in the administration of these federal funds. And I hope we can continue to give them the support they need to prevent us from losing federal funding for these programs because of inadequate monitoring and reporting. And I think they're on top of it, and I just hope we can continue to do that. With an overall decrease in federal funding and with the increase in reporting requirements and monitoring, I really do appreciate the county's increased support for the homeless programs. It's essential for this county to continue to maintain adequate funding. We know we have a Housing First program for homeless. We want to implement those, but at the same time, we need to take care of the people on the street. That increased funding has provided a homeless services coordinator in Ms. Laurel Weir, which is something that's essential to maintaining continuity throughout the county. And so, again, I strongly recommend that the board support staff's recommendations in agenda item 21.
Agenda
21.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Patterson.
I never thought you'd hear me say
that. Yeah, agenda 21. Mr. Tanaka, along with David Benz.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Steve Tanaka with Wallace Group. I'm the district engineer for San Miguel CSD. I'm here with David Benz, who is the interim general manager for San Miguel CSD. So obviously we're here to thank you for your continued support for the community. As you know, San Miguel is already underway with this 16th Street sewer project. It's our most critical infrastructure project in the community. It conveys the majority of our wastewater to the treatment plant, but to get there it must go under the Union Pacific Railroad right-of-way. That particular stretch of sewer is very deteriorated and in need of repair and replacement, so thus the need for this project. So again, we appreciate your support in that regard. So one of the things along the way is that has happened is we definitely needed to better refine the utility definition within the railroad right-of-way. Felt that was very critical to the success of this project as we move forward, in addition to meeting the other environmental needs for the project. So again, we are very appreciative of the additional funding as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Benz, something to add on?
Yes. There's a time and place for people to step forward and to say thank you. And that's what I want to say to this board and to your excellent staff that you have. I have 38 years of experience in municipal government. Been with the district now for 5 months. And all of my contacts have really been greatly responded to professionally, and your staff has done a wonderful job for us. So I'm here to say thank you and to request that you approve the reallocation of the CDBG funds to our sewer project. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Bill Watt, followed by Tillman Moen.
Good morning, Chairman Gibson, members of the board. My name is Bill Watt. I'm the executive director of the El Camino Homeless Organization. We usually go by ECHO. I wanted to speak in support of staff recommendations, and in particular in the $287,000 for the rehab and renovation of the ECHO shelter. It's been an incredible process over the last 9 months. ECHO, which is a grassroots organization, probably 95% volunteer-driven, community-supported, had to grow up real fast in March when we closed escrow on First Baptist Church, which had been our temporary home where we'd been paying very little money to stay and basically trying to be a homeless shelter in a church. We closed escrow and immediately began rehab and renovation of the interior of the shelter, mostly focused on health and safety issues, ADA accessibility issues, and coming up to code with a shelter because we had been operating under the designation of a church. With the $287,000 requesting, we are going to be doing phase two of our renovation. So phase one, which was the interior of the shelter, is being followed by phase two, which is the exterior. Fortunately, through phase one, we have our pro bono architects, our pro bono general contractor, the process of dealing with contractors and subcontractors all in place. We have financial management in place. So we're really ready to roll with this CDBG funding. And staff has made it really clear that this is going to be a tight time frame, an aggressive work plan, and we're ready to go with that. Upon award of the funds, basically, we'll be exterior shovel ready. And so I'll be glad to answer any questions. Just wanted to thank the staff. I'd say it's been tough love, but that's been good for Echo from them. I know we can do this, and I believe we'll get support from the staff as we go forward. So with that, thanks for your past support, and any questions I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Watt. Mr. Moen, followed by Tina Salter.
Does it go up there? Okay, thank you, council members, for this time. My name is Tillman Moen. I'm the president of the El Camino Homeless Organization, and I'm here to present you a little physical description of what we plan to do, have been doing and plan on doing with the CDG funding. As you can see on this first slide here, we've been sheltering the homeless family since 2001 and have been in the existing facility for the last better than 8 years. Next slide. If you would move the next slide. There, I'm sorry. Okay, this is our actual facility right here outlined in the blue lines, a little over 1 acre. You see it's got a large parking lot, which we intend to do some work on to provide for future space. Up in the left-hand corner, you'll see a long building there. It's actually a kitchen and a dining room on the upper left-hand side of that. And the rest of that is the previous sanctuary that will be converted, or is being converted right now, to a dormitory. It'll house actually 32 individuals, men, single men and single women, on each side of an aisle with semi-privacy with room dividers. In the square building you see on the right, there is a two-story building. It used to be a classroom, and it has many single rooms in it, and the whole downstairs of that will provide for families themselves where they need the privacy, and there'll be at least capability of 16 members of families in four different rooms in that area. Okay, next slide. Yeah, and this, once we acquired that property through this, from the First Baptist Church, we had to comply with certain city requirements. And through our private capital funds, we have installed a fire sprinkler system. That's completely installed except for the monitors, which are yet required to be installed. They'll be done within a month. We're under construction of the new ADA bathroom, compliant with ADA requirements. And we poured concrete on that last Friday, and we'll be done with that before the end of the year. Those are two major significant tasks that we had to perform. And also, we installed some windows in the sanctuary for ventilation and an ADA ramp in the foyer, and also some room dividers and some lead and asbestos testing. Next slide, please. Yeah, on this slide here, I cut and pasted this morning, and as a result, we ended up with redundancy, but this is where the emphasis should be anyway. What we plan on doing with the CDBG capital funds, and that is we're going to put in a 180-foot, 8-foot-high wall. We're going to do a new covered patio area, installation of a new trash dumpster, and as you can see there, the rest of those items, I'll show them on the next slide, if you would, please. Yeah, next slide. This kind of describes to you physically what's going to happen. You can see bottom left-hand side there where the dumpster will be placed. The parking lot renovation will be taken care of with a 180-foot-long wall. We're going to put a new covered patio area that's isolated from the wall so we can provide the privacy for our neighbors. And we also put periphery security and lighting around the building. Next slide, please. Yeah, and then we are in place. So we're presently doing construction, so we have management in place like Bill earlier mentioned. And we have a good contractor to do the management. We have seven members oversight from ECHO. We have architects and engineers in place. And we are ready to roll. Thank you.
All right. Sounds like it. Thank you, Mr. Moen.
Yeah.
And our final request to speak, Ms. Salter.
Wow. He said all the things I was going to say. My name is Tina Salter. I live in South Atascadero, and I'm a board member of ECHO, the El Camino Homeless Organization. And I'm here to report these staff recommendations, and I think that we can perhaps all agree that Agenda 21 in this case is something we can all support, I hope. So real allocating all those funds. So I'm going to redo a little bit of what both Bill and all three of the previous speakers said. In less than a year, we have bought our church building that we used for almost 10 years, and we did embark on this very ambitious building project. And all of this initial building projects were all done with private funds from our community. And so we have, we already have broken ground for the shower and bathroom facilities, because the shower and bathroom that we had in there was one shower under a stairwell and two weird bathrooms. So that was all we had for all the people. We'll be increasing our capacity to 50 beds from 31 beds, and we will be moving our clients downstairs. They are all upstairs right now, so they're going to be moving downstairs, and any office and storage will be moving upstairs. All of the funds that are necessary for this are also private funds that we've raised. And the next phase, the phase that we're talking about for the $287,000 from this reallocated funds, is the remodeling the outdoor space. And I think that Till's map there showed you pretty well what we were going to be doing. But it's a 170-foot block wall between our property and the back fence neighbor, and that'll provide a little more sound and privacy control for him and his family, and also safety for our people. We'll be moving and remodeling the playground and probably changing it all around to make sure that we meet the ADA requirements if you start building a new playground. We'll be going to have a new patio cover so that people can line up or do stuff out of the rain and out of the sun, which will be a great thing. We'll have 20-foot landscaped buffer between Echo's activities and all the neighbors. We're going to have security lighting and then a reconfiguration of the parking lot, which will enhance the safety of the client, the staff, and the volunteers. This is, as I said, what some of the reallocated funds will be used for. And once again, I urge you all to support the staff's recommendations for this item. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salter. Appreciate the update and the details on this project. With that, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. Ms. Arnold.
Yes, well, I'm excited and encouraged. This last year I've been serving as chair of the Homeless Services Oversight Council and addressing countywide and appreciating the folks in our county that really step up to the plate to address the homeless issues. In the North County, I'm excited that, and I'm thankful and grateful to staff for working on this reallocation, and I intend to support your recommendation here. Echo's doing a fabulous job in the North County, and the cooperation that all of the between the other organizations is wonderful. I have been concerned, and we addressed it a little bit today, or discussed it a little bit today, that some of our longtime organizations that do good work in the North County just have not been able to keep up with the continued requirements on monitoring and reporting that the federal government is requiring of them. And so it's my understanding, and if you don't mind, before we move on, just addressing or confirming that in the future, the county, in an effort to help them continue their good work, will be able to kind of separate the funds so that our county local discretionary money will be made available to these smaller groups. The money won't have as many strings attached. Of course, the accountability will be required, but it won't. And a perfect example was Sue Warren talking to us about their inability to use volunteer and donated construction workers because of the strings that come with the money, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to help them out with that kind of thing a little bit more in the future. For now, this all looks good, and I think we're all happy to see this the recommendations you brought forward today.
Go. Second.
That's Frank's way of telling me, all right, that's enough.
Is that a motion?
It. Would you like to make that a motion?
So, yes, please. I'd like to make a motion that we accept and adopt staff's recommendations.
Second.
And Mr. Meacham. With that, I didn't know if staff... I saw staff nodding in the question of helping the smaller organizations with the discretionary funds with less strings. I don't know if there's anything to add to that, but
just Just a yes, huh, Suzanne? Yes, we are.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that is our strategy,
okay,
to allocate general fund support to those smaller nonprofits.
Thank you so much.
And with that, I have a staff light on. Mr. Lilly, no. With no further discussion, then we'll call for a roll call vote, please.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Ray?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. All right. We come then to the last matter of business before us, which is the presentation of the Cattleman of the Year, and with impeccable timing, have seen the assembled entourage appear, and would recognize Mr. President of the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association. I think Mr. Johns would come and be ready to do that that function for us, please.
We all here? Hello, ladies and gentlemen of the board. My name is Steve Johns, and I am not the president, but I am past president. Dale Evenson, the president, couldn't be here, so we drew straws. I won.
That's right. We're pleased to have you.
I am on the board of the San Luis Obispo County Cattlemen's Association, and it is my distinct honor and privilege to introduce to you our 2013 San Luis Obispo Cattleman of the Year, Kevin Kester. Kevin was born and raised on a ranch in the Parkfield area, where he has been operating the family ranch for the past 25 years. A graduate of Cal Poly, he and his wife June started an Angus-based commercial cow herd focusing on top genetics that have resulted in the Kesters being recognized as top local breeders at the Mid-State Fair and the Salinas Valley Fair. Kevin won one of the first carcass contests with a steer from the family ranch. Their children, Kayleen, Cody, and Kara, have all gone through the 4-H and FFA programs and have shown numerous steers and replacement heifers at the Mid-State Fair, as well as other members showing Kester steers and heifers at both the Mid-State and the King City Fairs. A few years ago, they diversified their ranching operation by putting in a vineyard. This is a partial list of the committees and offices that Kevin has held or is presently holding. And this is a long list. He has served on the board of directors for several years, has served as president of our county association, then president of the California Cattlemen's Association for 2 years. He is currently serving on the state cattlemen's board of directors, CCA chair of Wildlife Management Committee, vice chair of the state political action committee. He is currently serving on the National Cattlemen's Beef Association's Board of Directors, is immediate past chair of the NCBA Joint International Markets Committee, NCBA chair of Tax and Credit Committee, on the Board of Directors and Executive Committee for U.S. Meat Export Federation, which has 19 offices around the world. He is the current member of the San Luis Obispo and Monterey County Farm Bureaus, a founding board member of the Fairs Heritage Foundation, and past chair of that board. Served on the Shandon School Board and is a member of both the Paso Robles Trail Riders and the Rancheros Vistadores. Kevin credits the team of his wife, June, and their three children, Kayleen, Cody, and Kara, for being at home taking care of the ranch when he is traveling to meetings and representing us in Washington, D.C. Acknowledging his many accomplishments, dedications, and commitment to the ever-changing industry and his outstanding contributions to the beef industry, as well as to his community, it is easy to understand why his peers have chosen Kevin Kester to be their 2013 Cattleman of the Year.
Thank you, Mr. Johns.
You are welcome.
Mr. Kester, would you take the lectern? It's a particular pleasure to have you here today. You do have an astounding resume of participation and contribution to the cattle industry here and statewide and beyond, and it's a pleasure to acknowledge you for this this honor.
Thank you, Chairman Gibson, and the rest of the Board of Supervisors. It's a distinct honor to be recognized by my peers for this honor of being Cattleman of the Year. And I, again, want to recognize my family. My, here today is my wife, June, oldest daughter, Kayleen, and my son, Cody. And so without their help and my youngest daughter, Kara, who's at Pastor Hubbell's High School, we have to keep the ADA funding up, so she's still in school today. So I just want to thank them for all the help and support throughout the years and into the future of what we do, and to keep the agricultural industry strong and our communications with Sacramento and Washington and here viable and ongoing. So look forward to working with all of you in the future, and I'd like to also and thank the Board of Directors for the San Luis Cattlemen for the honor. And I'd like to also recognize Supervisor Ray and welcome aboard to the Board of Supervisors. It's look forward to working with you in the future. So with that being said, I'm glad Supervisor Hill made it back, so maybe you have an opportunity to have a steak for lunch. So with that, lunch is waiting on us, and I'm between it and lunch, so I'm going to say thank you to everybody, and we'll see you at lunchtime.
All right. We'll recognize Supervisor Arnold, I know, has comments.
Yeah,
here.
I just want to say, as a beef producer here in this county, Kevin Kester and his entire family have done just a tremendous amount of work to promote beef worldwide, but Kevin represents us so well at the national level, the state level, and here at home. So thank you all for what you do.
Mr. Meacham?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Not only is Kevin just a great friend, and the family's a great friend of ours as well, he's an incredible testament to his industry. And thank you for all you do. I know it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time away from family. And I don't think folks realize running a ranch like you do, I know from my family and my daughter and my son-in-law how much time it takes them and how much they depend upon their family to keep things running when you're not around. So my congratulations to you and congratulations to the cattle industry. Thank you.
Mr. Hill.
And just to echo the sentiments of my colleagues and certainly the cattlemen, you know, it's a real testament to Kevin to continue to be not just involved as a rancher and farmer and all these other things, but to be, as far as I know, recognized both in Sacramento and Washington as one of the key advocates for the industry, somebody who people always welcome in their office to get information and exchange, and it's partly because I think, as was evident here, he's a heck of a nice guy. So we look forward to lunch.
There we go. We do look forward to lunch. I would only add that the breadth of Kevin's interests and efforts is truly astounding. I first got to know Kevin some years ago as in the run-up to the Hearst Ranch conservation deal, and that an innovative project there that Kevin was solidly behind. So beyond the raising of cattle, your interests in the wider world are much appreciated. With that, we have no closed session today, so we will adjourn this meeting until our next regularly scheduled meeting on November 5th, and the supervisors will be going to the social event of lunch at the Madonna Inn, and we thank you all.
Can you take a quick photo?
Sure. Yeah, it's not a picture of us. Yeah, it's not a picture of us. Nobody wants to see that.
You guys can Photoshop this out.
Yeah, really, yeah. We're just standing here.
Just put a sunset in.
Yeah. What'd you do, Cody?
Good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you.